Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Coffee Clatch. This is Marianne Russo, and I am so proud to be able to bring my next two guests on the Coffee Clatch tonight. Carol Kranowitz started as a preschool teacher who noticed very early on that many kids were out of sync, and she began to study sensory processing disorder and guided these susceptible children into occupational therapy and into purposeful physical activities. And that's where she met our other guest, Joy Newman. And Joy is a perceptual motor therapist, and she founded Kids Moving Company. And let me just tell you, these, with their combined 70-plus years of experience, these women know their stuff. As all of you know, Carol went on to write The Out of Sync Child, which is the Bible for many parents with children with sensory processing disorder and those with motor and sensory issues. And on a personal note, The Out of Sync Child was the first book that I bought when my daughter first started having issues at a very young age. Carol also, before I forget, had asked me to mention that all children, not just children with sensory processing disorder, but all children can be helped by using these, you know, incredible tips that you're going to find in this book and, you know, get the kids out moving. Carol and Joy have went on to co-author Growing an InSync Child, which is why they are both here tonight. And let me just say very early on, if you have a child with any sensory issues or if you have a child that's very, very sedentary, this is the book to buy. You will love it. The tips are fantastic. And I'd like to just read a small excerpt from the book before we start the interview. Pediatricians, teachers, and other early childhood specialists now recognize that early motor development is one of the most important factors in the physical, emotional, academic, and overall success of your child. In the past, as children walked and became more independent, they went outside to play. They climbed trees, jumped in puddles, played hopscotch, and rolled down hills. By doing so, their brains were learning all about the concepts of up and down, right and left, forward and back, many of the skills crucial for the acquisition of reading, writing, and being in sync. So it is an honor to welcome Carol Kranowitz and Joy Newman.
Well, it's
welcome.
Our honor.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Marianne. It's our privilege to be here.
I agree.
That was Joy.
That's me.
Oh, I was just going to say. You know, I'm just so happy that you're here. Last week we had on Dr. Roya Ostabar, who really just explained to everyone what sensory processing was, what it feels like. She gave us some great analogies.
Yeah,
and I was just so pleased. She's just wonderful. And I'm so pleased that I get to have you back to back because, you know, even though, as you said, all of these tips that you have in your book are for all children, you know, our audience is primarily parents that have children with special needs, and the sensory issues are huge. So
what I'd like to interject, Marianne, is that while a lot of the listeners have kids with special needs, I'll bet they have other children who don't have special needs. And so often those kids are the ones who fall through the, well, they don't fall through the cracks, but they sulk in the corner because they're not getting as much attention as their siblings are. So one of the things we love about our activities is that more than one child can participate, and the whole family can flourish with the activities. So,
well, I think another
I call it flying under the radar.
Another important thing is, go on. Sorry. Hello?
No, I was just going to say, we call it flying under the radar, that a lot of the siblings really do.
Yes.
You know, they miss a lot. But, you know, as you were just going to say, Carol.
I think I was going to say that the
it was Joy.
That the one of the most important things we want to get across in the book and just across the world is that children need to move, whether they have sensory problems or not. And in fact, there are some children probably, well, not probably. I'm sure it happens that some kids who are on the borderline of developing these sensory issues may not need sensory integration therapy because they get the same thing they would get from therapy by doing some of these activities. So these activities are great for everyone. I can't think of a single human being in the entire universe that could get in trouble from doing any of these activities.
You know, you found, you know, what I found interesting was you wrote about how you found our society has lost sight of the value of taking our time. And I think that's so true. I mean, you wrote that we've become an out-of-sync culture. The balance has shifted towards, you know, emphasizing technology and academics. And, you know, it's been at the expense of movement. The kids aren't out. They're not playing. So how is this new reality hurting our kids?
Well, when we're rushing our kids, they don't have the chance to develop the skills that only come with time. Learning to walk takes time when a child is learning all by himself, not being held up by loving hands 2 feet over his head. And they learn to crawl in and out of the sandbox by crawling in and out of the sandbox, not by being plucked into it and plucked out of it. So we make life harder for our kids in the future by making it easier for them now by doing for them all the time. And
can I say something?
Please, Joy.
Okay. I think that we're all of us, adults and children alike, we're all rushing the adults in their everyday lives. And with the advent of technology that makes it easier, you don't have to go to the store to order something. You can just get on the internet. You don't have to get up to turn the station on the TV. You can just press a button. We are used to rushing, and we're used to things that go quickly. And so not only are we pushing our children to do things quicker, but we're not letting them take the time to not to blame any parents. I think parents just don't realize how important it is. And I think many of us don't realize how important it is in our own lives. Just take a breath and slow down a little bit.
Right.
And Carol had a great way of saying it the other day. Carol, you said omission and commission. I thought that was a really brilliant thing you came up with. Would you say that again?
I think we interfere with our children's smooth development sometimes through omission and commission. And the omission is not letting them have the freedom to just run outside and play. There are lots of reasons that we can't do that, but it's very important for them to be able to do that. And for them to be able to make some choices by themselves, by letting them make mistakes, letting them fall sometimes or give me another example of
what? Of commission?
Of making a mistake.
Omission. Well, anything. Just trying. Just instead of jumping in to do it for your child because you think you're making it easier for the child and you want to help the child and not for any other reason, you actually are making it hard for the child because the child learned. The child learns by reaching. The child learns by pushing up. The child learns by grasping. The child learns by pulling. The child needs that input in order to learn the kinds of things he or she's going to need to be successful in school and in life. I don't think it's a coincidence that many adults are on medication for anxiety and for depression. I don't think that's a coincidence. And I think many of the people who are adults now are victims of what happened maybe 20 years ago as we started getting more and more technologically based, we became more and more sedentary. And so I think we're doing it to our culture. I mean, our concern right now is to these kids because it's so easy to not do it if you just understand it.
Yeah.
Let's get our kids moving. One of the is it, first of all, you know, I understand what you're saying basically is if we constantly do for our children or if we plop them in front of a computer, they're not acquiring
exactly
the skills that they
right.
need. So, you know, it's our job to help them acquire it. Now, one of my first questions, because the way I would really like to go through this is, I want to just make sure that everyone understands that it's never too late, and I wanted you to discuss that as well as the different levels that you have. And then we are really going to delve into this. We are going to go specifically into all of the different sensory issues. And let's just start with, is it ever too late to start teaching a child with sensory issues, start teaching a child to acquire sensory processing skills?
See, I don't think you teach them. I think that's a big misunderstanding. Carol, you need to speak to this more than I do, but the sensory skills are not taught. None of this stuff is taught, and one of the problems is we're used to teaching our children things, and the most important thing about motor development and sensory motor and perceptual motor development is the child's got to do it to get it. The child can't be told how to do it. He's got to work his way through it to actually own it.
But to Marianne, and that I agree, of course, but to Marianne's point, is it too late? Marianne, it's never...
No.
It's never too
ever.
Late to get treatment from an experienced occupational therapist, for instance, or for...
For a parent to start initiating the movement.
Absolutely
and understanding.
Not.
You know,
absolutely
so it's never too late to start with a child.
That's
it's
right.
Never too late.
Start using the tools that you offer in the book.
I think the important thing is that first parents have to understand what we're talking about and why they should trust what we're saying to them, because their whole lives are based on this technological stuff that hurries. And so the first thing they have to do is buy into it by understanding what we're talking about. And then hopefully parents will just start to recognize in their own every day-to-day life how they can make a simple shift on something and how it can improve the sensory and perceptual motor functioning of their children.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So,
and, you know, the instinct child grows from acquiring sensory processing skills, you know, perceptual motor skills and visual skills, like you just said. And in your book, you mentioned that there are different levels. There's a beginner, an intermediate, and an advanced. So I'd like for you to just quickly explain to us, you know, the different levels and who they would be for. And then we're really going to jump into, because we have 45 minutes left, and we have a lot of material to
go
over.
Where did that time go so fast?
It goes so quickly. I really liked the fact that you had the different levels in the book. So Carol, why don't you go through the different levels, and then we'll go into the specifics.
Well, the levels that we have are because we couldn't come up with exact ages to help parents understand when the child would have the skills to do the activities we suggest. So because age is not chronological, it's
developmental.
Yeah. So some of our activities are for the child who's just beginning to acquire these important skills, and that, you know, he might be 10, or he might be 2. And one of our favorites is called the car seat scramble, where we
love that.
We suggest you take the car seat out of the car and you put it in the living room, and you say to the child, "Climb in," and that would be a beginner activity. An intermediate activity. I'm pulling out the book now so I can give you a good example. An intermediate one might.
An intermediate one, if certainly children are walking by the time they're doing an intermediate one. Right, Carol?
Follow the feather, yes.
And a lot of them were grade appropriate also, from what I had read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. So the follow the feather, here's one where you puff a feather up into the air, you blow on it, and then you throw it up and you watch it come down, and then you try to catch it on different body parts. And we have a bunch of different things you can do with a feather. So simple, but while the child is doing that, he's developing more and more directionality, laterality, midline crossing.
You know, the other thing about the activities is we explain how you can, although they're broken down into beginner, intermediate, and advanced, or I'm not sure those are the terms we use, but...
Yes.
You can also, within each activity, there are ways to make it easier and harder. So if you want to do the same activity with a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old, there are ways to do the same activity,
mm-hmm.
but adapt it so that what the
right.
older child
exactly.
has to do is
right.
a little harder than what the younger child
right.
has to do.
And everybody listening,
you know,
everybody knows that no one is perfectly a beginner or perfectly an advanced
right.
basket. I mean, you can be brilliant at motor planning and be very agile and do everything just superbly, but maybe you can't hold a pencil, or maybe you
brings us to, being into the specifics, because here's where I think we're really going to get into the meat of all of this and what you do and why it is so helpful. So let's go through them one at a time, broken down specifically, to see what they are. You know, and really that's, as I give you each of these sensory topics, what I'd like for you both to address is what they are, what acquiring each skill accomplishes for the child, and how we as the parents help a child develop these skills and gain these tools with these very simple movements that you have. So I'd like to start off with tactile.
All right, Carol, why don't you do the sensory, and I'll do most of the perceptual motor.
Okay.
So, do you want me to first give you a list of the ones that we're going to be discussing, and then...
No, we can come up with them. We're fine.
Okay, so we'll start off with tactile sensitivity.
Okay, so a child who has that an oversensitivity would shy away from messy play, for instance. And so what we want to do is give an activity to a child that's so alluring, so appealing, that he will get some tactile experience that he might not get otherwise. And some of our bubble activities, for instance, are a suggestion there. The thing that many parents miss is what's missing. It's hard to see what's missing. And if a kid is not enjoying the sandbox play and the
finger painting,
right, often parents say, well, he's just not interested in it. And that's okay. We don't all have to be interested in everything. But it's when it is causing the child to miss out on important lessons and he can't participate with the other children at school because he's hiding under a table, then it really, really matters. So some of our activities would help a child come to the table.
For instance, if there was a tactile sensitivity to clothing, what type of an activity would you have to help them with that? Because, you know, a lot of our kids have problems with clothing, with food, you know, textures. So specifically, what type of things do you have in the book for, let's start with clothing?
You know, specifically, we don't have that kind of thing.
Because it's not written as a therapeutic. What any activity that has a child touching or feeling different textures is going to improve their tactile awareness. So even if it's one of our rolling activities, where we suggest that they roll across a carpet and then they roll outside on the grass and then they roll maybe on a hardwood floor and change the different textures so that their body gets used to it, and we try to get the child to be excited about what he's doing without realizing what we're trying to get out of him. So
yeah.
He thinks he's rolling, and what we're trying to do is getting him to be experiencing these different textures.
That's the beauty of it, is that it's all done with play, so the children, you know, are so engaged and having fun that they don't realize that, you know, they're actually getting therapy. Right.
Right.
So, you know, the tactile processing, which, you know, we just discussed, and, you know, that affects so many different things. But also another really big problem is the vestibular processing. So why don't you explain, I mean, briefly what vestibular processing issues would look like, and then what tools you have that would help a parent, what movements?
Carol?
Okay.
Yeah, you do it.
Okay. So a child who the vestibular problem affects the way a child responds to movement and where his body is and his head particularly. And so kids with these problems don't like to get on the playground equipment, for instance. It's important to move about and to be moved and not shriek if someone jostles you and you
And the reason it's about. Important to move is so that you are developing your vestibular system as you're moving. If the child's very still, he's not going to ever develop the vestibular skills. He needs to stay upright.
Right. So it's sort of a use it or lose it problem here. If the child is very uncomfortable moving, he's not going to move. And then it's worse. It's harder to move.
It's just a cycle, sort of.
Yeah. So, you know, I really want our listeners to understand that Joy and I are not the kind, we're not occupational therapists who would work with kids with these problems. And we don't promise at all to say, you know, we don't say do these activities and your kid's vestibular problems will be fixed. Nobody could say that. But we do have some suggestions that you would invite the child to join in. And if the child's really resisting, then it's a problem best addressed by an occupational therapist. But there are things like bouncing baby. Now, there's a beginner activity, and
mm-hmm.
have some fun activities to have your child on your knee, and you turn and twist the child around and bounce them at different rates. Or there's hug roll, which is where you grab your kid, you give a big bear hug to your child, and you get down on the floor and you roll. And Joy often says that rolling is good for everything that ails you.
Everything in the world. Log rolling is good for everything in the world.
Yep. And emotionally it's lovely because you're being hugged by somebody who loves you so much, and you're getting tactile input, you're getting vestibular in a very safe way, because when you're on the floor, there's nowhere to fall.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting mm-hmm. proprioception, which is deep input into your muscles and joints. So in that way, we can say, try this and it will help your child. But
are you able to desensitize? I mean, a lot of the children have severe sensory issues and, you know, Asperger's.
Yes.
Do you find that children with those disorders, how do you desensitize them? Because, you know, many have explained to me that it's uncomfortable, that it's a painful sensation to be hugged. Although they like the tight hug, the bear hug, the pressure, the being, you know, squished between pillows. So does this help desensitize them? And before that, I would like to say, Carol, that I know you had a concern. One thing that I have said from the first day that I started the Coffee Clutch was that if you are coming here for a cure, you
don't
are
do it.
Going to a
right.
different forum, because that is not why I'm here. That's not why everyone else is
okay.
here. We are here to help you navigate this journey, parenting a special needs child. And the what we hope is that you will be able to learn and then teach your children coping and management skills to give them a better quality of life. So
okay.
don't have
okay.
any worries that
all
anybody's
right.
looking
okay.
for a cure, because they should be turning us off right now.
Okay.
If that's what they're
looking
for.
Don't turn us
okay.
off. Don't turn us off. We
no,
have great ideas
for you. No,
they're not going
to turn us off. Are you kidding? They love you.
All right, well,
okay.
this is what I know from my occupational therapist friends, that they say if the child has a tactile problem, let's say, one way to approach it is not through tactile activities. Usually proprioception is very helpful for different sensory problems. And
rolling.
That's right. Lifting heavy loads, pushing a stroller. Oh, well, Joy and I loved watching a little toddler on the towpath next to the Potomac River pushing his stroller, and he was grunting and groaning, and this stroller was going in all the wrong directions, and it was
and his mother let him
great.
Do it.
Yes,
he loved his mother.
That's right. That was not the sin of omission or commission or anything. She didn't pluck him up, stick him in the stroller, and push it herself. She let him have this very interesting experience of figuring out how to push his stroller and get it straight. My goodness, he was learning buckets of important things at that moment. Doing that, when the child is saying, is he squirming inside his sweater because the wool is too itchy, if you could distract him and say, well, here's a carton of encyclopedias. Please bring it to Daddy in the next room. Somehow, my OT friends tell me that will...
Well, it's... Yeah, I believe that.
It calms the entire system and will lessen some of that irritability caused by a touch that the child doesn't like, or an aroma, perhaps, that's bothering.
Marianne, can I add something to what Carol's saying?
please.
Sure.
Okay. So I don't want this book was written for everyone, and the reason that we wrote this book was we're very concerned that children aren't moving, and as a result of children not moving, we think we have some kids that just aren't comfortable doing the things that they need to do, and I'd like to talk about what some of those are in order to develop things. Now, the parents that are listening now who already have identified children with sensory needs, I think they would benefit from reading the book because all of these activities are fun. And they're very, if the most expensive thing you're going to have to spend money on is buying the book. And it's not that expensive, but after that you don't have to go out and buy any materials or do anything. We teach you how to use things in your house, things in your kitchen, things in your car, to give your child a sensory, a perceptual motor, and a sensory motor experience. And like Carol said, if you have a tactile problem, you don't work on the tactile problem, you work on something else. The same way if you have trouble with handwriting, you don't teach handwriting. You figure out why the child has trouble with handwriting. Is it the laterality? Is it the proprioception? Doesn't know how to move his arm? Doesn't know how to hold the pencil? What's going on to make it? And you work with that. So that's how we hope a parent would use our book.
So, that's one of the things that I really liked about the book was that even for parents who are dealing with sensory processing disorder, who are familiar with the disorder, this book, it gives you a different understanding of it. Let's just take the, proprioception. You understand where the difficulty is, but you may not understand that it contributes to skills like climbing, running, crawling, biting off a mouthful of food, cutting food with a knife and fork, that each one of these issues that we're discussing is really geared towards a skill that a child needs to learn.
And that's what we really...
That's what is great.
Well, our hope is that when parents look at this through a different way, a lot of parents get frightened when they hear their children have sensory motor issues, and it doesn't have to be frightening. It's not really rocket science. It's just something you probably haven't thought about in these terms ever before. And if parents will just kind of look at it through the eyes that we use in the book, they can own it as much. That's not to say don't take your children back to therapy. Of course they need the therapy, but you could improve the therapy. You can complement the therapy, right, by doing just little things at home. One of the things I tell parents is never walk at home. Never let your child walk at home. So, if you call your child into dinner, instead of walking, have them crawl or have them move like a snake.
Well, ladies, I just want to mention that I am so impressed because we have over 30 callers lined up.
Oh,
yay.
So I just want everyone to know that we will start taking calls in about 20 minutes. I want to get through a lot more, so let's try to briefly go through these so that we can take some calls.
Okay.
So the next sensory that I wanted to discuss is balance. And balance you have broken down into two ways in the book, static balance and dynamic balance. So can you briefly describe what each are and what, you can just give us one movement that would help so that we can move along because we don't like more.
Dynamic balance is balance that's moving through space. So that would be something like hopping on one foot. And static balance is when a baby starts to crawl and he gets up on all fours and doesn't lose himself, doesn't fall over. That would be static balance. So anything that Carol would suggest for vestibular would probably be working on balance. Would you say, Carol, or not? Maybe not.
No, they're a little.
Okay, so anything, have a child on all fours, in the tabletop position, some people call it the cat position, and say, can you pick up one hand? Can you pick up one knee? And so then they're balanced on the three parts of their body instead of four. And then can you pick up one hand and one knee? And we have a name for that activity, and I can't remember what it is.
Nose to knee.
Was it nose to knee? I don't remember what it is, Carol. Isn't that awful?
Oh, that's cat balance.
Cat balance, right.
Yeah.
Cat balance, that's right.
Cat balance. So, with with a child that's just starting to balance, then all you do is, you know, can you pick up one hand? Can you pick up one knee? With a child that's a little more advanced, show me how to balance on two parts of your body, and it can't be your feet. And, you know, it's full of giggles and full of fun for that older child who maybe doesn't, maybe is a little more advanced, but there's still the child has to think through it and figure out how to do it and own that movement, and
yes,
that's what's going to help that child improve.
Good choice of word there, Joy. Own the movement.
Right.
Because kids, you'll say, you'll say to a kid, well, you know, pick up one hand and one knee.
And they haven't really figured anything out
themselves. They haven't figured it out, and they'll look at you, and they'll, you know, with amazement, like, help.
Right.
How do I
do? No, you can do it. You can figure out how to do it. And sometimes you might have, you know, for a child that really is stuck, you might have to gently touch. Not pick it up, but just gently put your hand on the limb that you want them to move, because sometimes children proprioceptive or poor body awareness don't even know where that part is. You know, they can tell you where it is, but they can't really find it. So is
that
the kind of thing you're looking for?
And that also brings us into the bilateral coordination, because, you know, bilateral is the ability to move both sides of the body at the same time. And,
correct.
You know, infants, you know, and if we can move over up to maybe a little bit older age group, because, you know, the bilateral coordination is different because, you know, when a baby is born, they use both hands at the same time, everything
right.
is simultaneous, and they need to learn bilateral coordination. So why don't you explain bilateral coordination and why that is important?
Okay, I will do that, but can I just want to change? They don't learn it. They develop it. All of these skills need to be developed. It's not something you can learn. It's not something you can say to your child, do it this way. That doesn't work. You have to say whatever words you want to use, but the message is show me your way too. And that lets the child be responsible for figuring out how to do it. And then
Wait a minute, Joy. Let's get this clear. They can learn it. They can learn it. They can't be taught.
Okay, that's fair.
They acquire. They acquire the skill.
Acquire. Perfect.
Right.
We'll all agree on that one.
All right.
So
let's
bilateral.
Just quickly go into the bilateral, and then we'll go into a few more, and we'll start taking some calls.
Okay, so bilateral integration is using both sides of the body at the same time. And if you think of maybe a three-year-old jumping across the room on 2 feet, rarely will you see a child land on both feet at the same time. It'll be a more staggered kind of thing. Yet if you say to the child, how loud can you jump? He will usually, assuming he's got some bilateral integration, be able to do that. To me, the most important thing two really important things. One is that laterality, which I hope you'll ask us about, develops out of bilateral integration. And the second thing is, in order to be binocular, which means using both eyes at the same time, and you have to do that in order to have depth perception, you have to be bilateral. Basically, what it boils down to is you have to be even. It lets you be even.
Okay, and the directionality is the awareness of concepts.
Right.
Which is the next step. Now, my question was, you know, if the directionality is the awareness of concepts, and we're going to get into, you know, the laterality, and we're going to get into spatial awareness and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the directionality, you know, when I was reading that, would that play a role in dyslexia?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I think really.
Okay, so if you could just address that quickly, explain what it is, and explain. You know, why acquiring this skill is important.
Well, I want to say something. I think for you know, dyslexia is a big term that a lot of people use to describe a lot of different things. And I know there is a real true thing that's called dyslexia that people really have when they reverse letters and numbers and things like that. But I think more than directionality, it's laterality. That you're talking about letter reversals. I assume that's what you're referring to, Miriam?
The directionality, why don't we combine them both for the sake of time? So the directionality and the laterality.
Okay.
The laterality is the awareness of two sides of the body,
well,
correct?
Well, it's not just the awareness of two sides. It's the ability to move either side separate from one another. So
mm-hmm.
the reason you need laterality is if you think of a child with handwriting, he's holding the paper with one hand, and that hand really needs to be still while the other hand is moving to shape the letters. Right? And so sometimes a child with laterality issues can't hold that other hand. I mean, of course he can hold it straight, but he has to really struggle to hold that hand still. And that shows up in a lot of handwriting difficulties.
Right.
Right.
And, you know, it also, you know, has its simple things that you wouldn't even think of, how, you know, if you don't have this skill, if you haven't acquired it, you know, brushing your teeth, zipping
right.
and unzipping, you
right.
know, kicking a ball.
Exactly.
I mean, such basic
exactly.
things
brushing
that children
teeth,
have
right.
are awkward with, you know, now the parents can understand, you know, where the problem is, and then the movements. I mean, the movements that you have in the book, and we're not going to have time to go into them, but, you know, I'm just trying to give a layout to the parents. I mean, there are just great, very simple tips here that deal with all of these issues that we're talking about. And, you know, Carol, I wanted to move on to midline crossing, the ability to use your hand, feet, and eyes, because this brings us to the vision tracking, which my daughter had this. A lot of kids have this problem, and it really affects their being
everything.
Able to comprehend and be educated. So, Carol,
and
why don't you go into the midline?
Okay. Midline crossing is the ability to use the eye, hand, or foot on one side of the body in the space of the other eye, hand, or foot. So, for instance, reading, if you keep your head still, your eyes will cross the midline, which is right there in the middle of your face. If
the midline, the vertical midline, is this imaginary line down the center of one's body.
Yeah. So if you're batting a ball, you swing the bat across your body. If you're singing, if you're waving your arms at a football game, you're standing up doing a wave with everybody else in the high school. And
you're reaching across the table.
Yeah. Well,
to get
okay.
the juice.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, reaching or kicking a soccer ball, all of that requires midline crossing. And it's really difficult to go through life if this is not an easy thing to do, because you have to keep changing the orientation of your body so you're square on all the time. And it's something, again, parents can miss so much. They don't see the importance of it. They just notice their child might be a little bit clumsy. But it's very important to cross the midline
right.
for reading and writing and many, many academic skills, as well as social participation.
And one more thing I want to add that's really important about midline crossing is if a child doesn't cross the midline, then he tends not to integrate the two sides of the world, and that's a big thing for letter reversals. If he never reaches, as Carol said, across his midline to get something that's on the left side of his desk, then and he takes everything in his right side with his right hand, everything on his left side with his left hand,
right.
the brain doesn't integrate those two worlds. So to him, a lowercase b and a lowercase c are exactly the same thing. They're aligned with a circle. And he doesn't have that awareness of the two sides.
I'm sorry, Carol, go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to say that that a lot of what we're talking about right now, we're using terms and we're talking about concepts that might not be familiar to a lot of people. And
we apologize.
One of the things.
Oh no! Believe me. Unfortunately, my audience is very familiar.
Okay.
Okay.
That's good.
That's not a problem. We discuss all
been there,
the
done that. Huh?
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, you can been there, done that all you want, but I mean, this just gives your book gives insights into it that are very different.
Your book also gives
tips for parents that they may not realize. You know, everybody is so eager, and I think occupational therapy is an unbelievable thing. However, there are things you could be doing at home that are so simple and basic
right.
that will contribute to the occupational therapy
exactly.
and really teach skills. So I want to just move on because we're losing time here, and I mean this is just we're getting out so much. The motor planning and the spatial awareness seem to all go together with everything that we've discussed. So you know, if they don't have an understanding of where they are in relation to the world. You know,
right, they're never going to understand.
That'll affect everything.
They're never going to understand the relationship between letters to form words. They're never going to understand the relationship of circles and lines to form letters. They really need to do it. So if you carry a baby from one side of the room to the other, he's not going to understand distance unless he moves through it.
Or if you drive your 12-year-old to school when he could walk three blocks.
He's not going to learn.
Yeah.
Right, so there's a great activity measuring, Carol, is that what we call it? How many steps we call
yeah.
it, right?
Yeah.
How, how many steps is a great activity where you stand someplace and you say to the child, how many steps is it going to take you to get from A to B, from here to the car? And the child has to guess, and then the child moves through that space and is either proven right or wrong. And that, you know, the question isn't whether you're right or wrong. The question is to start thinking about distance and using your eyes to understand distance.
Right.
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the using your eyes, because I think that's something that parents often miss. And we've had
schools too.
Dr. Charles Shidlovsky on, who's an expert in vision therapy, neurodevelopmental vision therapy. And binocularity and visual tracking are a huge problem that often gets missed. And I think that it also is a reason for a lot of misdiagnosed learning disabilities and for a lot of struggling readers. So let's just quickly do binocularity and visual tracking, because they're both very, very important, and they will play into everything else we just discussed.
Right. Carol, I'll do binocularity. You do visual tracking.
Okay.
Okay, so binocularity is using both eyes at the same time. And anytime you see your child laying her head on her desk or laying on the floor to color, scream and yell and say, please don't do that, because that is that a child cannot be binocular when she's doing that. In order for her, she would see double, and in order to not see double, the brain automatically closes off one eye. So you never want to let a child do that.
Unusual posture is often a giveaway about a child's visual distress. Many children will prefer one eye over the other, and so they will tilt their head to give the advantage to one eye, or they'll look at something sideways almost, or they'll come very, very close to the book or to the television, and their nose is touching it, or they will squint and turn away from too much commotion if there's a lot of visual activity.
Which is one of the reasons being bilateral is so important. When we mentioned that earlier, bilateral integration is so important because it helps the child be even, so that he or she avoids the kinds of stuff, Carol, the kinds of postures Carol's talking about now. But you know what? Can I just interject one thing? When you were talking about visual training, we had a great review in an optometric blog, I think, by someone who's a really well-known visual trainer, who said our book was a great compliment to visual training. It was like a book on home visual training, which I thought was a really nice
thing. Yeah, people go to our website, which is in www.insyncchild.com. They can see some of the nice reviews we've had. And
see an activity or two.
Yeah, an activity or two also. Tracking. Yeah, tracking is being able to follow a line of words across the page, or a bird in flight, or a tennis ball or soccer ball coming at you. And the child needs to be able to converge, which means look at something.
Exactly. It's a convergence issue, yes.
Right. And they need to be able to look at
something. And the headaches, too. You know, my daughter had that really badly, and the headaches were really the first sign.
Yeah, headaches are a sign.
I hate to hear this.
I'm sorry
I get caught up in this.
Yeah. So, you know, it's difficult sometimes to look at the blackboard and then back at your desk. And if you're copying an assignment from the blackboard, for instance, lots of kids will get lost doing that because it requires this rapid change in the visual processing from looking at something at the far point and then doing something with it at the near point. And a lot of kids, that is not discovered in many children.
And you know what else? Children are not born with 20/20 vision. Children are born farsighted. And whoever invented children made them farsighted because he or she wanted them to be outside, looking at things at a distance, playing at a distance. Whoever that was that invented them did not want them sitting in front of televisions and in front of computers and things like that. We call that working an ear. And little kids really don't develop 20/20 vision until about 6 or 7, I believe. And by having our children not be doing these things outside, we are developing more and more nearsighted kids.
And here comes my commission that I didn't get to say in the beginning. The commission is bringing home all these electronic toys for kids. I think that they're depriving children of the real activities, the real hands-on, body-on activities that improve the sensory diet of children at home. And by giving them a Game Boy, they're learning how to... They're learning technology, but they're not
learning technology.
Well, I think that's something that parents misunderstand, because I think a lot of parents think that when the children master the whatever it's called, the keyboard or whatever they use, I don't have them, that they're getting hand-eye coordination.
No.
And, you know, okay, maybe in some degree they are, but, you know, there's a lot more needed to develop hand-eye coordination and the other skills.
Absolutely,
so, you know,
and real life doesn't take place 5 inches in front of your face.
Right.
You know, real life takes place out there.
Go ahead,
Carol.
Well, I was going to say...
No, I just want to say I want everybody just to know that this book gives great tips. And like I said, it's the type of thing where you don't realize everyday things that you do as a parent that can make such a difference in your child. Just by doing simple movements, you can observe and see where there are difficulties, and you can help them. And we have a lot of parents
on
hold.
And they're fun. I hope that most that everybody has fun doing them. We had so much fun writing this book, thinking about how much fun people would have doing these activities. So we hope it's fun for
everyone.
Well,
ladies, are you ready
for
some calls?
Sure.
Are you, okay.
Carol,
well,
you ready?
Let's get started.
Yep, ready.
Okay, we're ready.
Hello, welcome to the Coffee Clutch. Who's calling?
Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, this is Hartley Steiner. I wasn't sure if you were talking to me or somebody else.
Yes,
hi,
I
Hartley.
Am. Maybe you can just lower your radio a little bit in the back.
Oh, I can turn it right off. Sorry. Well, first of all, hi, ladies. I've got your book right in front of me. Thank you for it.
The new one?
My favorite part of it, actually, when I was reading it earlier today right before this to make sure that I knew what I was going to say, is the part where it talks about what activities are important to master prior to the next. So the example for me would be my 4-year-old who wants to be able to write but can't throw a ball yet.
So you're talking about the chart? Are you talking about the
hand? I would love it if you talked a little bit about how those building skills are really important, because I think my son missed so many of those first steps, and he's moved on intellectually, but he hasn't moved on physically.
Oh, that's a great question, Hartley. Go ahead, Joy.
Okay. Motor development is sequential, and that means that you really need to crawl before you can walk. And, of course, you know, there's exceptions to every rule, but by and large, motor development is sequential. And the sensory pieces that Carol talked about earlier are really the absolute foundation. They're like the hard wiring of the child. But when we come to perceptual motor skills, which are more things like balance and laterality and midline crossing, those things are sequential and come out from one another. And so there's something called splinter skills that a lot of us are guilty of, probably in ourselves as well as in our children, and that is expecting someone to do something before he's ready to do it. So, for instance, your child wants to ride a bike, and probably if you practice riding a bike with him for the next month every day, he'll be able to ride a bike, but he probably can't ride a bike because his balance isn't in place yet, or his proprioception isn't in place yet, or whatever he's missing isn't in place yet. So he'll be able to ride a bike, but he won't be able to have those other foundational skills that he needs. So it won't transfer into anything else. Is that the kind of thing you're looking for?
Yeah, I think that that's really key. And I think that, you know, we as parents, just like we're rushing to pick up our kids and move them from place to place,
mm-hmm.
we're also rushing for them to make that next developmental milestone, and we're skipping all of the small things in between.
I think you're right. And I hope that something that the parents get from this book is that not only are you not doing your children a disservice by letting them take their time, you are doing them a very large service. That there's nothing great, you know, when parents say, oh, my child can read and he's only 4 months old. You know, that's not something to be proud of. That's something you should go, you know, hide your head.
Yeah, you got to crawl. You got to crawl before you walk.
Yeah, you've got to take your time. I mean, all parents, just take your time. It doesn't take, it still takes 9 months to grow a kid, and it still should take just as long to grow a child. So
take
well, I really appreciate the book. I'll let you guys move on to the next caller, but thank you. I mean, these are real
thank
practical
so
activities
much.
That my whole family can do, all three of my children, and I think that they're really going to like them, especially
good.
The flip-flop one. I want to build up
oh,
that
one. Oh, is that fun?
Yeah. I, you know, I've tried to get them to do it. My youngest can't do it, but I'm really hoping my oldest can. He's got the big bilateral, binocular, all kinds of issues. So
take
I'm anxious to see how that does.
Take your time. Take your time.
I will go slowly. Like I said, I'm ready to build up to it.
Okay, wonderful.
By the
thank
way,
you, ladies.
Is, Hartley,
take care, Hartley.
Yes.
Hartley, who's
okay.
our speaker, our questioner right now, just has a wonderful article coming up in the next issue of SI Focus magazine. So thank you, Hartley, for writing, and thank you for calling.
Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome.
Bye, ladies.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay.
I couldn't tell
let's
who was speaking
caller.
Now. Okay. Good evening. Welcome to the Coffee Clash. Caller, are you still there?
Went to put
hello?
The
hello? Hello. Hi, you're on the air. Okay, I think we'll try to take the next caller. Hold on. Hello, welcome to the Coffee Clash. Hello, you're on the air. I think a lot of our callers have held on so long that we've lost
oh,
most of
them. I'm sorry. Come
yeah.
back, callers. Come
back.
Back,
callers.
Let's see if I can bring them back on. Hold on. Welcome to the Coffee Clash. Yep. Callers, please try to call back in. I know we may have lost the calls. We had so many on hold for so long. So please do try to call back in, and we're going to take as many as we can. So, you know, Carol, what would you say is the most important thing for a parent? Let's say you're a parent that the child has diagnosed sensory processing disorder. You know, after you take a breath and, you know, compose yourself, what does a parent need to know that is going to help the child be able to acquire all of these skills and not have to have so much pressure of all of the therapy appointments and all of the doctor appointments? What would you tell the parent?
Wow.
Yeah, that's a big
wow.
question. I would start with looking at a child and trying to put myself in the kid's skin and asking myself, is this child trying to get away from something that is too much for him and making him so uncomfortable? Or is this child needing something more right now, some sensory input right now that he's not getting because we've stayed at the dinner table for too long? And I think when we can understand that so often children's behavior is sensory-based, it really helps us facilitate their opportunities to go do something that will help themselves. So if it's pulling away from something that's uncomfortable, I think we should let kids get away from an uncomfortable situation like a noisy birthday party or an itchy Halloween costume. And that will help the child become self-aware. And this is a big goal because a lot of kids have what's called learned helplessness. When we can say, I think I know what's bothering you. Let's see if we can find something to help you. It helps the child know that he can be in charge. He can regain some control. And that is a very important ticket for learning how to compensate for sensory skills and overcome some of them. So I think that it's just that awareness of looking at a child and, again, looking at what's not there because it's very hard to see what's not there.
So yeah, that, also, I think I'd like to say something, too. I think another thing parents need to do is not take things personally. If a child, if a parent thinks he's doing what's right for the child and the child's not reacting the way the parent thinks the child should, then I agree with Carol. Just take a step back. And
you know, I think that, you know, for a lot of the kids, I mean, a lot of, you know, some children have, it's a spectrum, you know, it, sensory is, you know, just like everything else, autism and everything else. And there are some kids that it's just so painful. There are sensory, the lights, the sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a parent has to be aware of when they need to pull that child back.
Right.
That, you know, they, it has to be such a gradual desensitization for these children. And becoming aware of where, you know, where this is coming from. It's not an easy disorder to treat. It's something that's very misunderstood, and it's important for teachers and parents to work together because, you know, these kids go to school, and there are a lot of sensory issues there.
And it's really, I don't know where you are or where our listeners are, but I think where we are, there aren't a whole lot of people that, a whole lot of teachers that understand it as well as they need to.
And you're talking geographically, Joy.
Geographically, yeah.
Yeah.
My hope, and I think Carol shares this as well, is that teachers will read this and maybe have...
Well, we have a lot of educators that come on, and we're very fortunate that on our tweet chat, there are also other chats that go on that are for educators for children with special needs, and they're for gifted children, and we're very, very fortunate that we tend to combine our hashtags so that we share information with each other.
Well, that's great because I think it will really, I think our book could be very helpful to teachers who maybe have children in their class that they're not exactly sure of what's going on with them. They think
and,
it's
behavioral.
And,
you know, as I always say,
mm-hmm.
As I always say, the teachers, you know, it's not their fault. They're not taught about these disabilities.
Right, and that drives me
crazy.
And
those that are, even the special education teachers that are taught about the disabilities, cannot possibly be expected to understand all of these children. And when we live with these children and we have a hard time unraveling it.
Right.
So we have to educate the educators, as we say here.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We educate the educators,
right.
And we need to educate the parents. And what I'm going to do is something a little bit different tonight. I am going to end the show on the air because we have 3 minutes left, but the tape is going to continue to roll because we have a lot of callers that called back.
Oh,
so if
good.
You ladies have, you know, a little bit extra time,
yes.
I would hope that maybe you could take some calls from our parents.
Absolutely.
And I would like to thank you both very much for joining us.
It
and,
was a pleasure.
You know, it again, Growing an Instinct Child is a fabulous book for all parents, especially
yes.
parents
thank you. Thank
who
you.
Realize
thank
their children have some sensory issues. So I thank you, and we are going to take some more calls. So
good.
Let's go back to my switchboard. And hope that we can get them through this time. Hi, welcome to the Coffee Clash. Hello, you're on the air. I feel so badly. This poor person has called like 6 times. Let's try the next one. Welcome to the Coffee Clash.
I think it might be a phone problem, Marianne, not a...
It may be. We had trouble getting started tonight,
yeah.
everyone.
Right.
Hi, are you on the Coffee Clash?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I wasn't sure which line was open, so I didn't know if I should have answered. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. So welcome
to
the Coffee Clash. Do you have a question for Carol or Joy?
Yes, I do. Thank you. And thank you for having the show and touching on this topic. We see a lot of issues in the schools with the children, and it's all relating to this whole thing of attention disorder and all that. But I also wanted to see, what are your thoughts and how are we educators to deal with these special needs children? I mean, I don't think we're seeing enough in terms of teachers being qualified enough to deal with these type of situations in the school.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right, and I think that with funds being short, more and more training for teachers is being eliminated. The best suggestion I have is to go to conferences and read books and keep your, you know, try to encourage teachers to keep educating themselves about it, because the children with the attentional problems and the sensory problems and perceptual problems are going to keep coming. They're not
Yeah, the more until we change the way society is with technology, the sensory problems are going to keep on coming.
Right. I would say to teachers, not only educate yourself, but insist on more recess.
More, I was going to say more movement.
More
add
movement.
More movement into your classes. And we don't know what age. Are you a teacher?
No, I'm not. I'm a parent, but I also work with the schools. And one of the things that I try to do is I try to help the teachers to get educated. As you say, educate the educator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I find as a challenge is we're dealing with emotional and psychological issues here that many of the teachers are not trained for. And that's where we're seeing some of these abuse and bullying issues coming into play, because when a child is in the class and the child has a special need and the teacher does not know how to deal with that, the child end up turning around being, you know, laughed at or mocked
right.
or critiqued by the class.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're
well,
seeing
I think
an
one of the problems. I think
oh, yeah.
one of the problems is that children are so often misdiagnosed with behavioral disorders, and they become a behavioral problem due to the sensory issues. And if someone really took the time to look at the child and to understand where the behaviors were coming from, I think a huge percentage of these children have sensory issues, that once the sensory issues were resolved, the behavioral issues would resolve. And once the behavioral issues are resolved, a lot of the bullying will stop. So it's really a process that everybody has to get on board with.
Right, right.
But wouldn't you also think that it would be one of those things where before the child is put into the class that there is some kind of evaluation done that the teacher can say, okay, you know, since this is a special needs child, I get this information before. I give you an example. There are two special needs children that I'm working with right now that they were added to a classroom where the teacher had no knowledge that they were special needs children.
Well, that's just irresponsible. That's
right.
Wrong.
Right.
Well, okay, so whether it's irresponsible or not, it's a reality of where we're living right now, and to be honest with you, the reality speaks for the responsibility. So I'm with you 100% on that. What I'm trying to do is find the solutions and how to effectively come up with ideas to solve that problem.
Well, what is the special need of this child, in your opinion?
Well, Mary, you're in a I know the caller. I've had the privilege of being on his show, actually, and you know you're dealing. I think we're talking about the New York City school system.
Mm-hmm.
Correct, Mary?
Yes.
Okay. You know, that's just it's just a completely overwhelmed situation, and you know, really, what Carol and Joy do is help give parents. Different tools to use to help their children, not so much dealing with the educators, although the educators need this, but these are more tips that the parents would be doing at home with the children.
But I would like to say to the caller, if you go to our website, www.insyncchild.com, and there's dashes between the in and sync and child, and you want to give me more information about what the special need is, I would be happy to make a few suggestions about what you can do with him or her without diagnosing anything, of course, but just it's worth a shot.
Okay, I'm willing to. Ms. Russo, if you could you know, pass my information on to them. I work with schools across the country. So for me, my feedback to you right now is coming from a broad spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
We have many, many cases right now of special needs children that in this situation. So I would really love to collaborate with you guys on that and share whatever we can.
Wonderful.
Because ideally, at the end of the day, our concern is the well-being of the children. Whatever we can do to get that, you know, going, I'm more than happy to do that.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll definitely facilitate that, and I'll get you guys all together.
Good.
Thank you very much, Mary, for calling in. I appreciate it. Let's see if our next caller is still here. Welcome to the Coffee Clatch. I think we've lost them. Well, ladies, I really appreciate you joining us today. I mean, it was just a very informative session.
It was a wonderful interview from our from our end for what you gave us. I thought it was wonderful, so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I mean, you know, early motor development is key. And, you know, a lot of the tips that you have in the book are for very young children. And, you know, it's adaptable into as the child grows. But as I said, there's so many things that parents that have children with sensory issues, whether mild or severe, could be doing at home that are, I mean, when you look at them, you're going to say, oh, I never thought of that. And, you know, I think that not only, you know, I haven't dealt with these issues, but from reading the book, I was thinking, you know, this not only is something that you're showing the child or you're doing with the child so the child can gain these, but it's really, I think, going to help parents look at issues with a different set of eyes.
Oh, we hope so.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important because, you know, a lot of parents know about sensory processing disorder. We understand all of the different topics and issues involved, but I think that by playing these games and doing it, like you said, in a fun way, you're going to probably see things in your child that are going to send up some red flags. So,
and
you know,
yourself,
I thank you for writing it.
Too.
It's a great book.
Thanks so much,
thank
Marianne.
Thank you so much.
We'll be in touch.
And Carol, as you said, you know, we have to set that date for you to come back because I really do want to jump also back into the Out of Sync Child because, as I said, that was a Bible for so many parents. So,
excellent.
I'd love to have you back and love to discuss that book too.
Good. Great. Thank
okay.
you, Marianne.
Thank
good
you
night.
Both very much.
Bye, Marianne. Nice to meet you.
Bye-bye.
You too, Joy.
Bye-bye.
As
bye.
We end the show every day, you are your child's best advocate. If not you, then who? Become an informed, educated parent. Thank you for joining us on the Coffee Clutch.